Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame death party!
What's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek. I'm, of course, your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I'm joined from the man in Kitchener himself.
Alex.
That's right, guys. So we are here to bring you yet another weird, strange, unusual, or fucked up, nine times out of ten, edition of Twig, your flagship of stupidity. And, well, it's been a week here on the show. Here in Southern Ontario, we are enjoying the hot, humid, hazy days of summer, which means stay inside with no pants on and in the air conditioning, because it's 40 degrees outside. Go outside. Are you out of your fucking mind?
And that's like, what, like 100, 110, something like that?
Something like that. And it's humid, so it's sticky. Anybody who says, oh, I love the hot summer. Okay, I'm willing to believe that. But if you genuinely enjoy sweating where it's so uncomfortable, you're crawling inside your skin, I question thy sanity.
Those people are usually under 200 pounds.
Well, yeah, they're like sticks. Like, oh, I love sweating.
Because they get cold easy.
I guess.
But not just that. Anybody that says that, they say it because they want attention. Like, when I took a summer semester at college a few years back, and there were a lot of people from India here doing engineering programs at my college. And I said, what's it like? And they said, it's as hot here as it is in India and Pakistan. And I was like, oh. And I said, do you like it? They're like, we hated it there. We thought it was going to be cool here. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, with certain times of the year, it gets as hot as, like, subtropic level areas.
And they say climate change isn't a thing. I really doubt that. But yeah, I mean, it's brutal. This summer, actually, no, all things considered, it hasn't been that bad. Not as bad as last year. We're in a bit of a heat wave right now. It should break by the weekend. It's surprisingly nice inside my apartment right now, so I'm not going to venture outside in my wheelchair because I don't want to die.
Well, my portable air conditioner died 2 days ago in the living room two days after putting it in, and my brother checked for me because we bought it together years ago, and he goes, our extended warranty expired at the end of May.
Oh.
And I went, what? But then I didn't put it in this year in May like I usually do. I put it in like May 1st because it's always so hot. But this year was actually cooler. I didn't have to put it in until July. And then I went, son of a bitch. Had it been as crazy hot as last year, I would have had it die beforehand and had it fixed. Luckily, when my roommate moved out, he left an old AC, or not old, but like a window unit that's a couple years old. And we're like, oh, this one works perfectly fine. So we installed that. And now I've got a good temperature running. It's running at about I would say 21 degrees in here. Celsius.
It's about 19 in here, which is pretty comfortable. So and I'm enjoying it.
Consider that my apartment's half underground, right? So it's actually pretty good because it's always the walls are cool to the touch now, which is the best thing.
Mm-hmm. When you go outside into my hallway, it is a world. Like the walls are sticky, the walls are sweating.
Oh, I went to get my mail, and I went, I'm not going out again until tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to be not a pleasant week here in southern Ontario. So there you have it, the weather report. But thankfully, you're inside your car right now, apartment, house, and/or supervillain lair. Listening to this podcast, we do thank you. So coming up on the show this week, we have our review from Paramount Home Entertainment. We'll be looking at the 2019 remake of Pet Sematary. And Alex, you've got a pair of reviews for us as well.
I do. Kill a Kill If, fighting game from Arc System Works and Studio Trigger, the animation company that made the anime, as well as the IMAX original film Space Station on 4K Ultra HD from Mill Creek.
Exciting stuff. And of course, coming up in the news this week, we're going to be looking at what happened in the world. Such casting news potentially involving the James Bond franchise, Bond 25. We're going to be looking at some
or 26
also,
if you count the Never Say Never Again, which they seem to forget exists.
We're also going to be talking about the TurboGrafx-16 Mini, which has its full assortment of games. Someone is stapling bread to trees and so much more. But before we hit everything, Alex got a unique email last night.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Evidently, I may be replaced on this show.
I had a spam email, and unfortunately, I clicked the delete button because I was like, I was already tired, and I thought, oh, I'll just get it out of my trash later, but I forgot that it was in the spam folder, meaning that when it was deleted, and I'm not going to try to find a way to get it back. But anyway, it was basically one of those Chinese emails we get fairly frequently to our Twig emails. It's like, We build custom handbags. Do you need somebody to do mineral mining? It's like all these crazy things that are business related because they see a business email and they just assume that we make things or something. But this one happened. It was a Chinese email and it happened to say, "Would you like a replacement for Mr. Dodd?" And I was like, "What?" So I clicked on it and when it opened it up and it just says, "Michael Dodd is." Broken down and not working right. Would you like a Chinese representative replacement? Would be a boost to your show. And I was like, what? So I deleted it. So apparently they consider you defective and broken and they wanted to replace you with a Chinese replacement.
I'm missing a leg, not my brain. Jesus
well, apparently
Christ.
They think that you're just not worth it anymore. So I was tempted to see what kind of Chinese replacement representative I would get. But at the same time, I was like, I kind of like my broken Dodd. So
yeah. It's so weird. Like, I've been getting so many emails this week that are clearly phishing scams. I'm also getting a number on my phone. I'm finally getting those texts like, do you have a BMO account? Have you been compromised? No, fuck off.
My favorite ones, and they get them once or twice a month, are the ones that from the
conservative party.
No, the hackers, in quote, that have watched you jerking off, even using your camera when you're not paying attention, and they know you got child porn. So if you don't send them a Bitcoin by this time, they're going to release it to your friends and family that you've done this. That was a scam that the RCMP was actually talking about and sending out to people saying, hey, this is a scam. This doesn't exist. It's just a way to try to get a Bitcoin
ransomware.
Out of you.
Yeah.
And it's like, first of all, none of that ever happened. Second of all, I'm somebody smart enough to know when my camera is on and off. So even if I did look at porn, I would know what device I was working on. And the fact that they try to threaten you is like, show my family porn I was watching. It's like, first of all, the porn that I watch, if you show up my family, I'd be like, yeah, I watch that porn.
Yeah. Like, wow, that's pretty mundane.
Exactly. So that's why I laugh at it. It's like, you have, and then get an email 2 days later, you now have 2 days left. And the thing is, you don't want to respond to it in any way, but you just want to see every couple of days, what are they going to say? And then nothing happens for like 6 months and you'll get another email. So
it's like, weird how many people suckered in by that, though.
Well, my thing is the only people that get suckered into that are people that are afraid because they actually watch child porn.
or something well, equally as insipid.
Because no, because it's very specific. These emails, they say you're watching underage porn.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, very, very, very specific. So, those people, and well, here's the thing: there's two types of people that are going to be doing that. People that know how to cover their tracks, so they wouldn't even be bothered by that email, or two, people that get raided by the RCMP anyway. So
if you get caught, fuck you.
Yeah, if you get caught by that, you get what you deserve, or if you get duped by those people, you get what you deserve.
Pretty fucking much.
So yeah, but yeah, it's weird how elaborate and how very precise these emails are getting. Like the fact that they wanted to replace you, Michael Dodd, because they know you're defective, in quotes.
Replace me with a Chinese knockoff.
Well, I felt like asking, what's defective about him? And they just said he's broke down and defective. And I'm assuming the only thing you could think of is because you weren't on the show for so long, they just assumed that you were broken or something.
That's amazing. Like, man, either that or they're like, man, he's been really depressed. I guess he's broken.
Well, who knows what kind of deep algorithms they're using, right?
Yeah, that's fucked up. That is pretty funny, though. So anyway, we got a lot of stuff to cover on the show this week, so we will be right back as we often are. And here is my review of Pet Sematary from Paramount Home Entertainment. We'll be back, guys, right after this, only on This Week in Geek, otherwise known as Twig, the flagship of stupidity. We are looking at Pet Sematary from Paramount Home Entertainment on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital. And this is based upon the 2019 remake, which came out earlier this year. You might remember on the show, I actually reviewed the 1989 original Pet Sematary, which I did recommend and still does hold up as a horror movie. The remake, starring Jason Clarke, who you remember as John Connor from Terminator Genesis. Think of that what you will. He's not a bad guy. Kind of reinterprets the story for a modern horror audience and does make several notable changes to the storyline, focusing, trying to bring it more back to the book and kind of drawing upon the Zelda elements and kind of dealing more with the loss of the child. And spoiler alert, they do change things in this movie compared to the 89 original and the book. And that change, I gotta say, is actually for the better. They do give you a big, ha, bet you didn't see that coming, did you? And it really makes the horror come alive, especially later on in the movie where things take a decidedly sideways turn with Lewis Creed and his family. And it's one of those horror movies that I really do recommend you definitely give a chance to. Especially if you like the idea of the modern remake. Because sometimes dead being better is great, but sometimes a reimagining can be just as good. I do like everybody in this movie. I think it's fantastically acted. There's some great scenes, great special effects. John Lithgow definitely plays Judd with the same kind of charisma that the original guy did. I can't remember his name, but I know he played Herman Munster, and I know he passed away not too long after doing My Cousin Vinny. But anyway, a little bit of trivia there for you. The talk about the special features on this, there are an alternate ending, which I gotta say, I don't know which ending I like better, the theatrical or the alternate. The alternate definitely takes it in a weirder direction, but not as dark as the theatrical. The theatrical is like, oh shit, are they going to kill? And I'll leave that up to you. There are some deleted scenes as well. There's night terrors, which are like dreams they had. There's one which kind of tells a story which was kind of in the original movie, but it was, if I remember right, was cut from this one. Telling about a soldier who came back from the war and, well, came back, so to speak. And it's a story told by John Lithgow's character. And there's also a huge documentary. It's like an hour and change long. And it's one of the better documentaries I've seen where they cover all aspects of the filming process. They talk about the characters, adapting the book, building the sets. And it's really, really nice. So overall, my recommendation for Pet Sematary on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital from Paramount Home Entertainment is give this one a buy. I really think it's a solid movie in and of itself, and the special features definitely make it a worthwhile package to your collection.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
Welcome back to This Week in Geek, where, of course, we cover the news that is, was, and forever shall be marked into the books of history. And this week, we're going to start off with something kind of interesting. This is speculation and rumor at this point, however, being reported by Yahoo, so I'm going to say there's some credibility to this, that 007 will be played by a black woman in Bond 25, though not what you may think. Initially, so according to an insider,
when you say that, my mind initially goes to 1970s sitcom sassy large black woman.
Fortunately, not. This one will be going to. I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, so I'm going to try my best here. It's Lashana Lynch. She, you might remember her from this year's Captain Marvel. She was Maria Rambeau, who will be known as the character Photon later on in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or from the comics of Captain Marvel. But anyway, according to this insider, there's a pivotal moment near the start of the movie where M says, "Come in, 007, and in walks Lashana, who is a black, beautiful, and a woman. It's a popcorn-dropping moment. Bond is still Bond, but he's been replaced as 007 by this stunning woman. Bond, of course, is sexually attracted to the new female 007, tries his usual seduction tricks, but is baffled when they don't work on a brilliant young black woman who basically rolls her eyes at him and has no interest in jumping into his bed. Well, certainly not at the beginning." I saw some people talking about this online on my Facebook and Twitter. People were pissed because whiny fucking babies.
I'm not pissed, but I have an issue with some, maybe how they present it. Don't make this a trope. Don't make this like, I'm a strong black woman, blah, 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 blah. Don't make this the focal point of, like, it's the same thing they did when about 10, 15 years ago, everything had to be gay. As in, every show had to have a gay person. Everything had to have a gay slant. Everything had to be this, and it had to be over the top. Stop focusing on things on, like, it's not making social change if you force things or overemphasize things.
Yeah, if it just happens, then it just happens.
If it just happens, I'm perfectly fine with it. Yeah, I'm absolutely cool with it. I'm saying I have a feeling this is going to be a little over the top in how they present it. Don't make the entire marketing of the film into, look at this black woman who's Bond.
I'm going to have them work together. Well, that's the thing. She's not Bond. She's just taking over the code name of 007.
Yeah, so it depends. Yeah, exactly. It's how they proceed with this. I was not a fan of the last Bond film. I thought it was just piss poor.
I never saw it, actually.
It was garbage.
I kind of look at it this way. A number of years ago, Captain America passed on his mantle to Sam Wilson, the Falcon.
Yeah.
So there was a black Captain America.
There's no problem with that.
People got pissed about that. Like, Captain America can't be black. I'm thinking, people talking about having the guy from Pacific Rim. I can't pronounce his name. The black guy.
Elbus.
Yeah, they wanted him as James Bond.
And before
that's
him,
fucking cool.
The one guy was going to be a black Bond, and he ended up being, I think he was in Bond, but he was like M's bodyguard or something. That guy was going to be Bond originally. So it's been done or it's been thought of before, but the problem has always been, how do you introduce it? How do you make it? There are always going to be racist people and bigoted people that don't want it. And I don't want to be lumped into that group, because that's not what I was saying. What I'm saying is don't make it hokey.
Yeah. Just make it cool.
Yes, exactly.
That's all I want. Just be cool.
And what this does for me is it opens up the thing. It's the possibility of what I had thought initially, which was that this is all the same continuity as the people always thought that the Daniel Craig Bond stuff was now a different continuity than the previous ones. But I'm like, no, this opens up the possibility that when Bond retires or that 007 and even the name James Bond is a code name. So there's no reason why we couldn't have Timothy Dalton or Pierce Brosnan show up as retired agents.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it's basically, it's a legacy code name. It's like, yeah, it's, a moniker, it's like Captain America or the U.S. agent from Marvel, stuff like that.
Because originally, if you remember, Sean Connery was supposed to show up in Skyfall. He was supposed to be the old man at the house. And that would have signified that, like, he wasn't going to play a different character. He was going to be his James Bond. And he ultimately turned it down because obviously he's got some health issues and stuff. But, like, what it shows is that this would allow, like, a continuity that goes through all the films. You'd be like, oh, so they aren't all the same person. As in, like, they're not from every film. Every actor is not playing the same person. Every actor is playing the same codename agent. So, and it would be really cool because, you know, some of them are dead, but you could easily get, you know, you could get Pierce and Timothy Dalton just sitting at a bar picking up chicks or something. You know what I mean? In the background, you could be like, what? And you'd be like, it would blow everybody's mind.
Yeah, it would be a cool scene and it would set up a new direction for the franchise. It would breathe new life into the Bond franchise.
Like let's say Daniel Craig gets the shit kicked out of him, and even the new Bond woman, she's captured or whatever, and they have to bring in retired agents, and look who shows up. You get the two. I mean, Dalton's like 70, but he's in fantastic shape if you watch Doom Patrol. And Pierce Brosnan, the same deal. Like, you just have them show up for a couple scenes, you know, come back, and you'd be like, holy shit. And there's your billion-dollar franchise right there.
Yeah, it would work. Moving on to our next story. This one kind of surprises me, actually. And this one comes to us via comic book resources. This is about Star Wars. Recently, according to the Wall Street Journal, a report was released breaking down some of the most expensive TV shows being worked on. Not surprisingly, Star Wars, The Mandalorian, was on that list, and it is reported that each episode of The Mandalorian cost nearly $15 million to make. Now, The Mandalorian has a season one order of a confirmed 8-episode season, so the series costs at least $120 million to make, and that's not including marketing and undisclosed fees.
Now,
and they're already working on a second season with director Jon Favreau already working on scripts.
To put that into context, it's going to need that a budget like that when you think about it for some of the, if they want to go with some space stuff in it. But that's the same budget that Swamp Thing had, and that's the reason it was canceled. There was some upper management stuff because they weren't sure what network they wanted it on, and they didn't think that it was going to be good for DC Universe, but it was reported between $13 and $15 million per episode, and that was because of all the body horror effects they did and all the physical effects.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is Game of Thrones level. Like, except for this last season of Game of Thrones, where I believe they were spending
like 20
it was 16 to 20 per episode because of the dragon effects.
Mm-hmm.
But like seasons 5, 6, and 7 were in that range. So that, to give you an idea of what you spend on, and those are longer episodes too. Those are like, you know, 55 minutes to an hour. So it all depends on what they want to do. Keeping it to that 6 to 8 episode miniseries arc is a good idea because they probably were just set, like they said, hey, you've got, we're going to give you $120 million. And it's like, okay, we can do 20 episodes with a slash budget, or we can go 13. Well, how about we just give it 8 episodes and then use the budget where it's needed.
Yeah, smaller television seems to be a lot better now, I'm finding, because you look at things like Doctor Who, Game of Thrones,
Stranger Things
being a prime example. With smaller episode orders, you can cram a lot more in there in terms of star power, special effects, and just whatever your narrative needs, as opposed to stretching it out to the usual American 22 to 24 episodes a season.
Yeah, and you can still do with 8 episodes. That's 2 months. If you did it weekly programming, you can still release it weekly, and then, you know, people that watch it there can then binge it afterwards. It also makes for a more economical DVD or Blu-ray release. They can release it on 2 to 3 discs each, which saves them money, but they can still charge their $30 or $50 for the release. It also makes it more interesting for foreign foreign companies to pick it up in other countries, because then a lot of other countries in Europe and that, they still only do that, you know, shorter seasons like that, or a series in England is what 6 to 10 episodes, sometimes 3.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more in line there. Like the longer episode shows work great for procedurals like cop shows. There's a reason that we get 24 or 26 NCIS or Law and Orders. And they're perfectly, they're good shows. They're good for what they are. It's just, it's the kind of show it is, or a medical show. A show that has basically one story arc per season doesn't need to be 22 episodes anymore.
Very rarely. The only shows that I can think that have long story arcs, and they've fallen out of popularity over the last years, though they are coming back for a miniseries, would be Veronica Mars, where they'd carry the mystery over the course of the season, but you'd still get a 22-episode season.
Yeah, and Supernatural, which is ending this year. Mm-hmm. But like that whole Star Trek, Stargate, even like Sopranos, Sopranos last season, they were smart. Instead of doing, they were renewed for like 21 episodes, but they're like, that's too much for our kind of show. So they split it in two. I would say the start of the shorter seasons in American shows probably came from Breaking Bad.
I was about to say, yeah, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, that sort of
show.
Yeah,
when cable, because look at how having 15 to 18 episodes or whatever has ruined The Walking Dead. Right, like, because they started with like 8 episodes, 10 episodes, and then they got longer and longer and longer to milk people out of their 20 million viewerships per week. Mm-hmm. And it just destroyed the pace. So some shows, especially cable shows, aren't really meant to be that long. It's more of a network show thing or a sitcom. Like, I could not imagine. Could you imagine if Game of Thrones had to stretch their plot lines, except for this season where it was kind of rushed, but if they had to stretch their plot lines over 20 episodes a season instead of 10?
It would suck.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm looking really forward to The Mandalorian when it comes out this year, I think it does, with Disney Plus. Yeah. I can only imagine how good it's going to look. I'm excited.
It's going to be it can be one of two things. Either it can be a movie that was split into 8 episodes and then it'll have some filler, or it sounds like it's going to have enough plot for 2 movies, which is like, you know, 2 2.5-hour movies, and then you just have little bits here and there to pepper in for extra subplots and that. And if they do that, that's fantastic. And the fact that they have a longer shoot time than a movie means that they're not going to be as rushed to get all the plot points in. They can actually have time for good character development.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that it is now officially Star Wars canon, that's going to add a lot to the universe, kind of like a Star Wars Rebels is officially canon.
This will not be like how Warner Brothers is treating a lot of their properties on DC. This is Marvel's bread and butter, so they're going to keep it. They're not going to cancel it on a whim like Swamp Thing was or anything.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate that Swamp Thing couldn't find a new home on another network.
Yeah, someone tells me heads are rolling up at the Warner, like they're doing weird shit with their networks. So it was really surprising that they didn't get to move it to HBO, because that's where that kind of budget could be justified.
AMC, it could work, but all their money's invested in Walking Dead.
Well, and they don't own, AMC's not owned by Warner.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have to be a network that they own, and HBO is the only one that really makes sense, because, you know, they can't do that kind of show on the CW. It's all pretty people, but it's all pretty people being torn apart in horrifying, gruesome ways.
So, if
you haven't watched Swamp Thing, don't let that deter you. It's one of the best shows out there, and there's only a few more episodes left, so it's worth watching, especially when it's done, you can binge it.
That is my plan. I'm just going to binge it in a couple of days.
You know how much you like Stranger Things?
Yeah.
This is basically, what if Cronenberg and John Carpenter got control of a television show in the 80s?
I'm going to enjoy this, I think.
Yeah.
So moving on to our next story, speaking of John Carpenter, evidently he has been tapped by DC with Anthony Birch, and they are going to be writing a 40-page one-shot comic for DC based on the Joker, Year of the Villain number 1. For those of you that aren't necessarily familiar with the Year of the Villain, it is an event as follows, according to JoeBlow.com. Lex Luthor, now reborn as a human-alien hybrid, offering various DC villains and even some heroes heightened abilities and or tools if they join his Legion of Doom. The Joker, being Joker, isn't waiting by the phone for Lex. This puts the Joker on a mission to get his swagger back in a world gone bad by out-batting everyone, proving that the greatest evil is always the one that leaves them laughing. Recently, Carpenter and Burst previously collaborated on Boom Studios, the comic book people that do Power Rangers right now. They recently did Big Trouble in Little China, Old Man Jack. Carpenter had this to say about working on the Joker book. The Joker is the greatest villain in comics. I'm proud to be reunited with Anthony on this project. Burt also added, I'm excited beyond words to be writing for Gotham's greatest villain. I hope the Joker's exploits make you laugh, shudder, and grow nauseous all at once. This will be releasing on October 2nd, later on this year, for Year of the Villain number one. Just 2 days before the Joker movie by Joaquin Phoenix and Todd Phillips hits theaters.
Which I'm pretty excited, for.
I'm curious because it doesn't follow anything from the comic book, so I've heard.
Like,
it's
I know
a new interpretation.
This is a case of, like, they picked a good actor to go, like, for lack of a better term, balls deep into it. Like, he is going to go full
method
on. Yeah. Like, you might find him in a box crying for, like, a week after the shooting was finished because he has to decompress.
Like, it's going to be weird just to see what they're going to bring to the screen. I mean, to talk about the Joker Year of the Villain book, that might be enough for me to maybe pick it up on Comixology. Figure it's $5, who cares? Or the DC comic books app, or wherever you get your digital comic books.
And let's be real now, when it comes to week-to-week releases, most people don't even buy comics like that anymore. It's going to sell probably really well once the issues are all done and it's in a trade.
Yeah, like buying comics week to week, I still do that and I still buy the trades, though I get them digitally. However, I haven't had to pay for a trade paperback in months due to a particular publisher. Their app keeps screwing up, so they keep gifting me free books. Yeah. Yeah, today I got $140 worth of free books.
Well, there you go. I mean, sure, if you can rely on their system being broken for years, sure.
It's terrible. But, I mean, I don't want to out them because I really like them, but I'm like guys, get your app working.
I stopped getting weekly comics and monthly comics a while ago because the page count didn't go up, but the ads did, meaning the actual pages that you read went down.
I found that depended upon publisher.
DC and Marvel.
Yeah, DC Marvel are really bad for it.
Well, no, I like the IDW and all that stuff, but I realize like I can't spend $5, $6 a week on different on just like one or two books.
It adds up. I stopped in probably 2016 doing weekly comics. I read My Little Pony for years, and I would follow the odd Marvel and DC title, trying to get back into the industry, but it never worked. I didn't get back in the comics until Power Rangers Shattered Grid, and that started on issue 25.
Yeah, I'm much
and then
more
I caught
of a,
up via trade.
I'm much more of a trade guy now, and I think that's where it's going. Like, I don't know how comic book shops are really gonna see the transition, how they're gonna handle that. But like, if DC and Marvel, we're gonna get a note one day that says, "Hey, we're stopping," production of these. We're gonna release them only digital until
it'll never happen. Never happen.
You say
because
that?
I do say that because there's still an active enough industry, especially with the big brick and mortars like Mile High Comics in New York City.
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
the big one out in Denver, but the smaller stores. Press. Well, I'm You're saying right. There's always going to be a need for that physical book. That's not to
no,
say
no, that. I'm not saying physical book's going to go away. I'm saying I would not be surprised if they stop releasing physical of the single issues and you can only get them digital. Or you have to go to very specific retailers to get them.
I can't see it happening because, again, a lot of places rely on these books. Like, I know someone who owns a comic book shop and their weekly order is always between $600 and $800. So the little independent shops keep the big publishers going. I just can't see it ever happening. Now, will this be the truth in 10 years? I don't know.
All it takes is one executive to go, that's a line item we don't have to deal with. We can still sell trades because trades sell compared to single issues 10 to 1 now. Like they just do because they're sold in regular stores too, not just comic shops.
Yeah, but you can also pick up a comic on a regular newsstand too.
Like, not really. Not really. Diamond has basically fucked everybody over that way.
Yeah, that is true.
Like, you can get Archie. Like, if you go to a grocery store and you see like a Marvel comic or something, it's reprinted by Archie. That's basically it. And they were talking about going out of business too. So, like, Diamond basically has to get out of it. Like, they have to, DC and Marvel and all of them have to go to like a direct marketing, which is the way it should be. And like, there's no reason for Diamond to exist. Not in today's day and age where you can have online
exclusives. That's how they do it. They have exclusives, toys, exclusive
because they have
prints and covers and variants.
Because they make it, they have contracts that make it so that comic stores cannot buy directly from DC or Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And that they basically, somebody has to take on Diamond. And once they do, you'll might see better deal. Like, you'll be able to have DC and Marvel negotiate direct with retailers, meaning that the prices can go down because they can get in more shops. Because like, you right now, you can't go to a grocery store and pick up like single issues of Batman. They'll have like trades, because trades are not listed under the same category. So yeah, that's a long story to get into it for another time. But really, like, a monopoly is in charge of all distribution of single issues.
I'm thinking maybe at some point, I've got a friend who's a comic book shop owner. It'd be interesting to get his perspective on this as he deals with the retail side of this every day.
Because it's got to be killing his business.
It's not helping.
Having to deal with Diamond, and I've heard that they have pretty bad predatory credit practices against small stores. So
they do.
You know what I mean? Like, they'll try to screw over any of the small guys because they don't care. So like, there's a lot of things that I've heard of with them. But yeah, so it would be worth having them on.
Yeah, I'll have to reach out to him later in the week and say, hey, if you got a recording set up, let's talk. Yeah. Moving on to our next story, though. This one's a little bit happier, and honestly, I'm very surprised. The TurboGrafx 16 mini launches next year, I think it is.
Yeah, sometime in the new year, I think, is what they're saying.
Sometime in the new year, exclusively through Amazon. And it is launching with 50-ish games, including some untranslated Japanese games, which is annoying, but still the fact that you get them in North America no matter what is kind of impressive. So, do you want me to read all? Okay, I can't read any of the Japanese ones.
I'll go over some of them here. I'm pulling up the page because I think I'm the only person in Twig that actually owned one.
No, I had one, and I had the CD add-on.
You did? Okay, so I had the TurboGrafx. I had I picked it up when I had like 30 consoles, dude.
Yeah, I had this when I was collecting back in 2013. I had this. My friend Liam got it for me. I had actually a really good game collection for it too. I didn't play much of it though. I only played the Splatterhouse games, and I played Bonk on it. I sold it for quite a pretty penny.
Well, the games list, because they are a little different depending on if you get the PC Engine or if you get the TurboGrafx. Mm. But TurboGrafx, you got your Alien Crush, which is your pinball game. Pretty fun. Never owned it myself, but I've played it before. Victory Run Racing, I had that one. Blazing Lasers, I think, is the standard that almost everybody had.
Yeah, the shmup,
Newtopia, which is their version of Legend of Zelda, which is pretty well made. Dungeon Explorer, which is an RPG that I'm not a big fan of, but it's the one that they own outright, so they can release it without having to pay any licensing fees. R-Type, I think that's the best, I'm going to say, version of the 8-bit R-Types.
Yes.
Moto Rotor, didn't play. I'm assuming it's going to be similar to like a Road Blasters type thing. Power Golf, which nobody will play.
Likely not, yeah.
Easebook 1 and 2, which are CD only. So we're going to get the CD version. It'll be in English, because we had an official release of that. I believe Ease, is it book 3 or 4 or something, came out on the NES, and they were kind of crappy imitations. This is like the definitive version, because it had the same graphics as like the original PC release, but it had CD audio.
Mm-hmm.
You got Ninja Spirit, which is one of the games that people, you see a lot of Let's Plays on that. JJ and Jeff, which is hilariously garbage. It's a like an action platformer with giant heads, kind of crappy. Space Harrier, which pretty much everybody knows what Space Harrier is.
Yeah.
Right. Military Madness, cool. You get a strategy game that a lot of people like that we probably won't play. Chu Man Fu, never even heard of, but so I have no idea what that is. Psychosis, same deal, but I'm assuming it's a shooter because there's a lot of those. Here's where we get to a little controversy. Bonk's Revenge, so Bonk 2. No Bonk 1 and no Bonk 3.
Mm-hmm.
Bonk 1, I'm surprised they didn't include it because I guess they're like, well, we can only include one Bonk. There's no reason why not to include more, but Bonk 2 is better than Bonk 1. But no Bonk 3. Bonk 3 was a CD-based game. I'm assuming it might be a music issue because that's their mascot. Why would you not have... That would be like Nintendo Mini or NES Mini coming out and saying, we only get Mario 2.
Yeah, that would be a little weird.
Yeah, or like... I mean, the Genesis, you're not getting, you're only getting Sonic. I think it's, do you get Sonic 1 and 2 in the Genesis Mini? I can't remember. I know you get Sonic.
I think so, yeah.
Two. You can't get 3 or 3 and Knuckles because of music issues.
Yes.
So I'm assuming it's a similar thing here. Parasol Stars, which is one of the more rare, expensive games. Kadash, which is another Working Designs game. So Parasol Stars and Kadash are published by Working Designs, who you might know as the publisher of the Lunar games on the PlayStation and the Sega CD. They were known for super high quality releases that were delayed time after time, but you get things like cloth maps and all the collector's items. They did the Arc the Lad collection that came with like memory card stickers and thumbstick control covers and all this crazy shit. They eventually died because it was just too expensive and it took too long to release the releases. And they only came back recently under a different name. I think it was Gaijin Productions. But they were known for super high quality, but also injecting their own brand of humor. Like, you could be playing Lunar, and there would be a joke inserted in there about Monica Lewinsky.
That's strange. They took
liberties, and they were back in the day. So some people have issues with their thing because it's more of a localization versus a translation. But mm-hmm. a lot of people love their games, and these are their earliest releases were on the Turbo. So you get Parasol Stars, Kadash from them, New Adventure Island, super fun, Air Zonk. So we get Air Zonk, but no other Bonk titles. And then you have Newtopia 2, Soldier Blade, Lords of Thunder, which is an amazing soundtrack to that. It's basically heavy metal craziness to a shooter. And then Bomberman 93. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 16, 17, 18, 20, 2, 3. So there's 24 there. And then I'm assuming it is... And then the rest are... Now, did they... Here's the thing. I read the release. Are they saying that you get both the Japanese and the English releases on the same thing?
Yes.
Okay, so then...
That's the PC... how you get 50 games.
Okay, so the PC Engine releases, you get the Kung Fu... just Seiken Necromancer, which I'm assuming is a dungeon crawly type thing. Fantasy Zone, cool. Apare Gateball, no idea what that is. Nectaris, I've heard of. Dungeon Explorer, that one's in... What's both? Yeah, you get the Japanese version of Newtopia. Bonk's Revenge in Japanese, Ease 1 and 2. Super Darius, I believe Super Darius is a Super Graphics game.
I think so.
Which is one of, like, what, 3 or 4 that they made?
Mm-hmm.
Superstar Soldier, Daima Kimura, Newtopia 2, Eldenus, Gradius, Salamander, Super Momotaro Densetsu. That's an RPG. So, good fucking luck playing that in Japanese.
Yeah.
Ninja Ryokuden, so basically the Japanese version of Ninja Gaiden. But they included Snatcher.
Which now, is super text heavy. Unless you speak Japanese fluently, good luck.
It's available on
Sega CD.
Sega CD, but this is the Super CD version, so it might actually be better. I don't know. Be prepared for people to hack the system and install patches for in English.
Oh, likely, yeah.
Super Parodie, Gradius 2. Oh, they have Choaniki. That's the crazy...
weird shooter, yeah.
Muscly boner men shooter game. Dracula X,
which is an amazing game.
Bomberman 94, Panic Bomberman, and Ginga Fuke Densetsu Sapphire. What is that? Let's take a quick look. See, it is a shooter, like I figured. So most of the shooters you can play. I'm surprised that they included two games from Working Designs, but they didn't include the big rare release from them, which is Cosmic Fantasy II, which was the only JRPG, like true, you know, turn-based Dragon Quest Final Fantasy style game that they released here on that system, and it was a CD exclusive, and is, I believe, I know you can't, don't quote me on it, but I think it's the earliest fully voice acted JRPG in North America. And it is hilarious with how bad the voice acting is. But I found a copy. Actually, I found two copies of it. Some guy years ago found a box in the back of his store and he sold them on eBay. I paid, I think, $20 a piece. They were brand new sealed, opened one, kept one to sell. I eventually lost one when I moved, and then I had sold the other one for like $50. But to give you an idea, these were so rare that the guy basically didn't know what they were worth, and he destroyed the collector's market for it because he had a box of 50. And before that, they were selling opened for $380.
Jesus.
So, you know, people were getting them, and people were so pissed. You can't sell them that cheap. And he's like, I can sell them for whatever I want to sell them for. And I remember laughing my head off because for $40, I got two of them. And they were amazing because they were the kind of company that used to put out releases that you get the manual and you'd want to read the manual because there'd be humor in the manual. There'd be a lot more detail in there. And like their manuals were amazing. Like you remember back in the day when you'd like to read a manual,
mm-hmm.
that they were like the kings of that. So I'm surprised they didn't include that. I'm surprised that we don't have any Bonk. But other than that, it's a fairly solid release list.
Yeah. Honestly, in terms of what I thought this was going to be, in terms of what it is now, I'm fairly surprised. And for the price, it's worth it.
Yeah. Like if it's going to be under, it's going to be probably about $100 Canadian. Probably what, 80, 90 American, something like that too.
I think it's 100 American. So probably be at 120
at most. Yeah, so
120
here. You're going to be able to buy the multi-tap later on to play multiple, to play like Bomberman with like up to 6 or 8 players. So that'll be cool. Or the 5-player multi-tap, sorry. That's coming out. Now, it'll be interesting to see how fast it gets hacked.
My guess is within a month.
It probably won't be as fast as the PlayStation was.
No, because the TurboGrafx traditionally has always been a smaller retro market in and of itself, but it's very dedicated.
And it's going to depend on how good this emulator... If this is hardware emulation, this people are going to want to hack this immediately because it's been a system that's not hard to emulate, but it was traditionally harder to emulate of because it had the 8-bit CPU plus the 16-bit GPU, sort of a weird combo. So the emulators generally required higher accuracy to make it work right. And sometimes the CD audio didn't turn out right. And we've largely gotten around it now with higher end single board computers. Like people are turning their Raspberry Pis into it and that. But if this has like an FPGA chip in there, and you've got like full hardware emulation, this could become the killer device for all turbo emulation period.
I still don't know whether I'd pull the trigger on this.
Oh, because... I'm already down. Like they got me hook, line, and sinker. This is a way for me not to have to buy the systems to collect again.
Yeah, and I think that's, I don't know. I will say out of all the E3 announcements we saw this year, this one came out of left field.
Yeah,
I didn't expect this at all.
Like, because remember, I've got the NES, the SNES, the PlayStation. I got the Commodore 64 Mini. You know, I mean, I'm getting all those. Those are all going to go on my little display shelf, right? And I don't have to buy a bazillion games that take up space that I might play once or twice. If I've got the hardware that plays it and it works well, great. And this is a sizable chunk of what I would want to play. There's really maybe 3 or 4, maybe 5 other games that were released in the North, like North America, that you'd actually want to play that aren't on this list. Mm-hmm. And the rest are Japanese games that, you know, maybe have translated patches or not, but you can easily install them once they're hacked.
Yeah, it's like someone's going to figure this out sooner or later.
Yeah, exactly.
So that pretty much does it for the news this past week. As always, always want to hear from you. So feedback at thisweekingeek.net if you want to get in contact with us, or you can reach out on our Twitter at thisweekingeek or at birdmandaughter at deathphasetwig. Always look in the episode description for more information about that. But we're going to throw things over to Alex now, and we're going to take a look up in the sky, up above the atmosphere. We're going to take a look at a space station documentary, and I'll let Alex take that away right now.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When I was in grade school, the big hubbub with science was all about the science of space and exploration and the building of the International Space Station. So around 2001, 2002, when IMAX released their space station 3D film in all the IMAX facilities across the world, this is a time before you could go to see IMAX films at regular theaters like you can now. And even the IMAX films at regular theaters now aren't the same quality as the truly run IMAX theaters, like the larger screens, the fact that every one of them was broadcast at 70 millimeter, or in some cases like 3D films using like it was 270 millimeter films instead of digital. So I got a chance to see Space Station, the original film where they showed off the building of the International Space Station that we all know and love now. As it was being launched in the early 2000s, I saw it at the Ontario Science Center, which is in Toronto, and they have what they call an Omnidome, or an Omnimax dome. So it's an IMAX screen, but instead of like a 60 or 100-foot screen, it's actually like built like a dome. And your chair leans back, and you stare at this like circular space, but interestingly enough, there is no screen. They actually project a whole bunch of white light, and then they project into that light. So it's almost, it creates a 3D effect, but you're basically watching a hologram, is the best way I could describe it from my understanding. Now, that is probably the best screen, I'm going to say in quotes, I've ever seen in my life. There's nothing like it in the real world. Like, nothing comes close to, like, a consumer level of what that is. Like, you can go to, like, I know London here had the IMAX Fairgrounds. I don't think it's there anymore. Or when you go to an IMAX at like Ontario Place or even across the States, unless it's an Omnimax dome, you really won't know what I'm talking about and how realistic it is. Like, to the point where they would give you warnings that when you're watching scenes, if you start to feel dizzy or sick, just close your eyes for a couple seconds because it was so hyper-realistic. It was insane. Anyway, I saw a couple things there, one being a special on the universe itself. And that's what got me interested in science, which was about like explaining when they first found quarks and stuff. And then when they were like, thinking, this is when they were like still experimenting with what could be smaller than an atom and what could be smaller than a proton, that sort of crap. So it was before that sort of stuff was proven. So anyway, the space station documentary was really cool at the time, and I thought it was fun. I was about 14 or so, maybe 13 when it came out. Maybe, no, actually, I probably been 15. Either way, I was really, really engrossed with it. And now Mill Creek has released a brand new release of on either DVD, Blu-ray, or Blu-ray Ultra 4K UHD discs with a digital copy of the Space Station IMAX original film. It's 47 minutes long, and I haven't seen it in probably, 16, 17 years since it came out. And I've been very, very happy with the results of this. Like, I've had a chance now, because it's not super duper long, to watch it both in Blu-ray and on Ultra. And I can say that having, if you have an Ultra HD player, like I have a Xbox One X, it's and a 4K TV, it is well worth picking up the Ultra disc for it. The digital copy streams at about the same quality as the Blu-ray itself, so you're actually getting a pretty good quality digital copy from their Movie Spree new service that they launched for Mill Creek. And there really isn't anything that comes close, though, to the Ultra 4K quality on here. Now, again, this isn't the same quality as you're going to see on that Omnimax dome that I saw, but this is the best home representation you're ever going to get, or at least you're ever going to get for a very long time. The entire movie is narrated by Tom Cruise, and this is, I think, a pre-crazy nutjob Cruise. But that doesn't really matter, because he does a fine job of narrating everything that's happening. And there's little funny bits here and there that are narrated by the actual astronauts and cosmonauts. And it is in surround sound. It's in DTS:X on the 4K, meaning it's positional audio. So it's not like they told the left speaker to do this, the right speaker to do this. They just sort of position it. And this is the kind of technology that was developed by IMAX. So it, as far as a documentary goes, where you might think, oh, documentaries are usually sort of static audio. No. They are the pioneers of surround sound and sound staging. So it sounds fantastic, especially for a film that is, you know, in the 15, 16 years old or more. Visually, like I said, it's a huge upgrade from the DVD. So it's worth picking up if you are, you know, a cinephile or just want to see basically images of space in the highest quality possible, because this film was filmed in 70mm IMAX. Pretty much, other than the couple Quentin Tarantino movies, these are the only films that in the last 30 or 40 years have been filmed using 70mm, and they really hold up, because what you can do is they're optically so large that when you blow them up onto HD, like, 70mm is like the equivalent of, I don't know, 16K or 20K. I mean, we're only watching it in 4K. So every improvement with technology that comes out digitally, you're going to see a little bit more detail in these old IMAX films. So as far as special features go, it includes a bunch of behind-the-scenes making-of documentaries that were made for the film, totaling about 20, 30, about the same length of the actual film itself. And then you, like I said, you get a Ultra disc, you get a Blu-ray disc, and you get a digital copy, which is pretty cool. And the digital copy has some of the special features that you can watch on the website itself. It has an MSRP of about $36. You're going to find it cheaper than that on Amazon or at Walmart, and it's definitely worth picking up. I had a pretty good time. This made me flashback to when I was a kid watching it for the first time and going, oh my God. So yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth picking up in 4K if you have the ability to watch it in 4K. But even if you don't have the ability to watch it in 4K, pick up that version, because it'll future-proof your disc. You get a Blu-ray copy you can watch, and there's still the digital copy you can watch anywhere.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Welcome back to Twig, the flagship of stupidity, and it's now time for the weird, the strange, the fucked up things that are most likely done by Reddit. It is the weird news, and today we bring you something from, I think it's England, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's from thestar.co.uk. Someone is going around the town of Sheffield and stapling slices of bread to trees in a weird new craze. So evidently this has been going on for quite some time. However, one resident of Brynfield Cliff said there's a curious development in Brynfield Cliff Gardens. This week, the trees on the north side of the road have been decorated by persons unknown with slices of white bread which have been stapled in place. They're on the north side of the road, on the northeast sides of the trees. Is this part of some weird new cult? Actually, they may be right. Evidently, there is a subreddit on Reddit known as Bread Stapled to Trees. On Google, it says lots of people do it, according to one person. It turns out lots of people includes an impressive 187,000 who follow the subreddit, which was created in 2017. But one question remains, dear listener. Why?
Yeah.
The weirdest thing where I used to live, actually, there are two places I can think of. I used to live in Welland, Ontario, which is where Niagara College is. There was a shoe tree, and that's, oddly enough, fairly normal. People just staple shoes to trees. And this tree was covered in hundreds of sneakers, high heels, pumps, etc. Okay, that's a little strange. And near my old home in Owen Sound, I seem to recall there was a sneaker tree, but I can't ever recall anyone stapling bread to trees. That's a little bit out there, but I do find that rather amusing. Reddit's a wonderful place.
Yeah, I saw that and I thought, bread tree. Okay, that's going to be a story. Because, I mean, it was, if you read the actual title, I think it was the caption of the actual article is what caught my attention.
Someone is going around Sheffield stapling slices of bread to trees in a weird craze.
Yeah, and somebody called them the Sheffield stapler.
It's so weird just to see how much internet culture really spreads out into the world, and as much as the internet can be used for wonderful things like crowdfunding or bringing together lost relatives from across continents and lives lost and whatever else, people are stapling bread to trees.
Indeed.
Or do you remember a couple years ago where there was the creepy clown thing where clowns are randomly appearing?
That was from Italy initially. And where they just show up in like parking garages and like smash things on the ground and stuff.
Yeah. In a town nearby here, a place called Orangeville, there was a release from the OPP saying we are aware that a resident is going around dressed as a clown, running around with a chainsaw, scaring people. And I just got to say, wow, you know, when it infiltrates small rural town Canada, things have gone too friggin' far. And speaking of internet crazes this week, this wasn't a story I was initially going to cover this week. I was going to cover it next week, but I'll cover it now. So there's a shitposting group online, which if you don't know is just making fun of a particular topic, like Simpsons Bort posting is my personal favorite. And it's just, they make memes. And evidently on September 20th of this year, they're going to get people named Kevin and other people to Naruto run at Area 51, Groom Lake, Dreamland out in Nevada.
I saw
Nevada.
That and shrugged it off till I went, wait a minute, if they actually get 200,000 people to do it, they can't just kill them.
Well, here's the thing. The story has developed legs over the last 24 hours. I can't even believe this. This has actually happened. According to multiple people, they're now getting... Celebrities are now posting, I'm ready to go. And they got David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson. Now, I don't know whether this is fake. They're like, I'm ready.
I want to see those 50-year-old people just run like that. Just have him with his sunglasses on running towards it.
Just like fucking Naruto. That'd be fantastic. But evidently, the U.S. government, the U.S. Air Force, has issued a quote-unquote stern warning to not to attempt this. And even if you did get to Area 51, the actual base is still 20 miles in from the perimeter. So you better be ready for a goddamn hike.
Yeah, but 200,000 people, they can't just kill them. And that's almost too many. That's more people than they could ever possibly manage to stop. So if they got, let's say, 200,000, 300,000.
I don't know, a couple of bombs would stop them.
Yeah, but that would be the end. Like, that. Well, okay, there's a good way to end Trump's presidency and like ruin the career, the military careers of everybody involved. They just killed 200,000 people of their own people because they wanted to see, what was that, Area 51?
Still, it is supposed to be a top secret thing. It was only even acknowledged up until, I think, 6 years ago when it was, quote unquote, declassified in some official documents that said, okay, Area 51 exists. As you might know, that's where they developed the SR-71 Blackbird and other spy planes during the Cold War. It also has a infamous reputation for those who fly out of Nellis Air Force Base, I want to say, that it's a strict no-fly zone. And even goes back even further when the Skylab was up in the sky, that space station, people photographed it, and there was a huge kerfuffle between, like, the CIA and the NSA. They're like, you can't do that, but you did it anyway, and picture sat in a box declassified for, like, 30 years or some bullshit. And yeah, in pop,
like,
culture...
Ultimately, like, let's be real now. If aliens were constantly visiting us or did all this, there would be definitive proof from somewhere around the world by now. But what it is they probably got some weird, weird weapons they're testing there.
If aliens are real, and I've gone on the show many times and said I do believe in the possibility, we don't know about it. They're going to hide in a place that's so off the radar.
What's likely is this is a place where they're testing some sort of like sonic weapons or things that can hurt people that they don't want people to know about.
Or some new type of propulsion. Hell, maybe they have that anti-grav working. Who knows? But you're not going to Naruto run at it. No matter how aerodynamic you think you are by running with your arms behind you. No. Bad.
I do want to see 200,000 people do that. Well, you know what they'll do then? I know, because they can't just shoot them and kill them, and they can't even surround that many people. It's too much for them to take. That would be 200,000 people is more than any invading force has ever done in any country ever in one time. Like,
yeah,
even storming the beaches of Normandy was like 10,000 people. Like, this is, yeah, this is 200,000 people. That's everybody at like Rockin' Rio just descending upon the government.
Or like, it would like, be something impressive to see, let me tell you.
So like, it's like what if every single person that like goes to the Olympics, like to every arena, was all in one place at once and they ran at the government? The only way you're going to stop that is they can't even use, like, you know, when they have like the bean bags or they have like little ball bearing crowd control guns, because that would only take down the first couple layers. There's like 100 layers of people doing this. So the only way they could stop this would be deploying a sonic weapon
or flamethrowers.
No, they can't.
Not lethally.
They cannot kill them, because they, you know how bad that would be? No. But they would. No, this would be the time where you're like, oh shit, remember that stuff you used to see on TV, how they were testing sonic weapons? Well, now they're going to really show how they work.
Or microwave weapon.
That's what I mean. Sonic microwave. Like, they can't burn you to death, but what they can do is send out a sonic wave that takes out your equilibrium and knocks every single person to the ground, incapacitating them.
That would be a great weapons test. So you know what, guys? Yeah. Storm Area 51. I'm kind of curious to see what'll happen.
I want to see. Or you'll see something like they get there, like there's nothing there, and it's like, oh yeah, because you were stupid and posted on the internet about it, and they moved everything in the middle of the night.
Exactly. There were aliens there. Now they're not. You just had to go and fuck it up.
They're now in Delaware.
Moving on to my next story, equally as fucking strange as, well, the weird news should be, a Catholic bishop will spray holy water over an entire city from a military helicopter in an attempt to conquer demons he believes are plaguing it. Monsignor Ruben Dario Jarmiro Montoya will perform the mass exorcism for the Colombian seaport of Bonaventura during the city's annual Patron Saints Festival. We want to go around the whole of Bonaventura from the air and pour holy water on it to see if we exorcise all those demons that are destroying our port, he told a Colombian radio station.
The bishop ordained. It's always the Latin countries. We're just going to exorcise 20,000 demons all at once.
Hey, it's efficient. The bishop ordained in 2017 by Pope Francis himself added he wanted to get rid of all the wickedness that is in our streets during the helicopter flight. Bonaventura is South America's biggest Pacific seaport. It is also notorious for drug trafficking and violence waged by criminal gangs.
I'm just picturing, they'd be like, yeah, tell everybody that we're going to cover them with holy water. So they're going to dump it all over the ports where all the drug dealers are. And turns out it's just acid to kill all the drug dealers.
Oh my God. Or I think it'd be kind of funny if they do go out spraying the holy water, if someone just stands outside with an umbrella. Didn't get me.
Think about that. It's like, oh yeah, we burned away the demons, and it's like it turns out it was sulfuric acid they just dropped on all the drug dealers in the port.
Just geez, man. And like you said, it's always the South American countries that get the really weird things. One of our former contributors of the show, Dave Double D Dennis, did some work down in Colombia last year or the year before last, I want to say, and He told me some pretty wild story. Yeah, he told me some pretty wild stories, notably how he got mugged. Someone pulled a knife on him while he was taking a picture.
By small children.
By small children. Yeah, it was. I was surprised at that.
No, it was the small children that took his bike, I think.
Yeah, they took his bike and his phone and his camera.
I remember asking him, I said, why'd you just give it to small children? He's like, they pulled out a knife, and then I was like, oh, they're going to kill me. So I gave them my bike.
Moving on to our final story. As you guys know, I'm a huge fan of space, and this has been a recurring theme, as you'll hear in this episode, as you heard from Alex's review of the space station documentary. NASA is shutting off systems on Voyager 2, saving power for its long voyage into interstellar space. As you know, Voyagers 1 and 2 were launched into the solar system back in 1977, and they are the longest-running spacecraft still operating at more than 11 billion miles from Earth, and they're crossing into interstellar space. However, the power systems that are being still working on these spacecraft, known as radioscopic thermoelectric generators, or RTGs, they're yielding less and less power every year, so they have to start to shut down certain systems. Recently, a call was made to turn off the heating for Voyager's cosmic ray instrument. The instrument itself is still functioning for now, despite operating at conditions of negative 74 degrees Fahrenheit, when it was only tested down to negative 49 degrees. The craft has five remaining functioning instruments, which it still uses to collect data and send back to Earth as it continues into deep space. I think this is really cool, because Voyager 2 still has five working instruments, and Voyager 1 has four. Most of them have been switched off, which includes cameras and stuff like that, because they're so far away from sunlight and photographable objects. What's the point of having them on? However, something I found cool reading into this article is they're going to use thrusters at some point. The last time these thrusters were used was in 1989. So they tried to use them back in 2017. They turned on Voyager 1's thrusters, and I think it worked. Later on this month, they're going to try the same thing for Voyager 2 so they can realign the spacecraft a little bit. I'm not sure for what purpose. But the fact that these have been working for decades at this point, I think, is phenomenal in just space technology. The fact that we've been able to accomplish this with technology that literally came out in 1977. Can you imagine the probes we're launching now that'll still be working in 2050, 2060, 2070 with the advances we have in technology, how much they should work? I don't know. I'm honestly astounded.
You know, it's really a testament to what design was like when we actually cared.
Yeah.
You notice a lot of the newer things designed for the International Space Station emissions are breaking down because they're making them cheaper because the government doesn't want to put money into it.
Yeah, it's true, because they always go with the lowest common contractor who can build it cheaper and better or whatever. And I always... No, you go with the... If you're going to send something into fucking space, you make sure it's going to last. You make sure it's built by the best. You don't care how much it costs. You get it done.
I think the wonder of space has just been worn off probably since the space station launched around 2002. Since then, you notice it's just been like politicians don't really care. The public, you know, cares about finding planets and stuff. But I think there just isn't the wonder and spectacle that there was from 1960 to 2000 or so.
Yeah. Like now Trump, despite all his flaws, has sparked an interest in space with the... He wants to create a space force. I don't know whether he wants to create fucking Halo armor or what.
So did,
but to create
so
a military
did,
initiative.
So did, Reagan, but he was also a moron too.
He wanted to create the Star Wars weapon system, I think it was called, or something.
Yeah, no, here's the thing. He didn't want to, but remember, he was a hired actor to play a president. And anybody that like thinks that he was smart or anything, if you've seen him do interviews, he was incredibly stupid. He just knew how to do a good speech because he was an actor. So if you look, it's all about who's pushing what agenda for what. Having a space force, that's a nice way to say, let's focus
militarizing on space.
Yeah, and let's focus something else. America now owns space. Really? Really? Okay.
Well, yeah, because there is the Outer Space Treaty of, I think, 1969, where it involves terrestrial planets, the moon, no nuclear testing in space, yet missile satellites and stuff like that. It's all sort of crazy conspiracy stuff I don't understand.
If it sparks interest, great. If it sparks the wrong kind of interest, bad.
Yeah, exactly. Like, please don't militarize space. If you want to create Battlestar Galactica, we've got a problem. If you want to create the great ship to go to Mars finally, or colonize Mars or whatever, or new probes to go to Venus or Jupiter, that's cool. But can we keep guns out of space for right now? It would be cool. And that's all I got for news stories this week. Certainly Weird Strains, as always, generates conversation. We always want to hear from you. So feedback this week in geek.net. Subject line, defective Mike Dodd, to bring that old chestnut back.
Yes. And if you're one of our Chinese listeners, or really any Asian or East Asian listener, and you want to replace Mike Dodd, send a letter in to feedback at this week. You can explain why and what you bring to the table. Because if you provide a lot more than he does, he's probably willing to step down and be replaced.
You can be Birdman too. Anyway, so we are always looking forward to hearing from you. So we're going to take a small break here before we close out the show. And this is Alex's review of the Michael Crichton classic, The Andromeda Strain. We'll be back right here on This Week in Geek, only on thisweekingeek.net, otherwise known as Twig, your flagship of stupidity.
That is going to be on another week's show. That is not one of the reviews this week. I told you, it's Kill a Kill, the Kill a Kill video game.
I'm sorry. I got confused.
Andromeda Strain is coming this week, though, in a few days on the Turtle Treasure. So yes, that review is coming.
And I had it sounding so professional. We'll be back right after this.
Just have a quick one here, and it's a new fighting game from the makers of some games you might have heard of. Arc System Works, the creators of like Blaze Blue and tons of other. Basically, if it's a really good fighting game and it's not made by Capcom or NetherRealm, it's probably made by Arc System Works. So, what is it? It is Kill a Kill, based on the anime series. And I won't go into detail because it's a story-driven game in that it ties in with animation from Studio Trigger. And it's a little different, though. It's one of those ones, it's like an arena battle brawler, but with a traditional, I would say, almost like layout of the buttons, the way things work. It's like, what if you married the fighting styles of like a Mortal Kombat type thing with the arena battles that you sometimes see in like the Dragon Ball Z type fighting games. So it's sort of a hybrid of that. You can move anywhere you want in the 3D battlefield. You can jump in the air, juggle enemies, do different button combinations to do crazy moves. Visually, it's one of the most striking games I've seen in this genre probably ever. It almost feels like the anime come to life, if that makes any sense. The closest I can say that anything that's gotten to this level of as far as detail in the anime looking like the game and the game looking like the anime is the Dragon Ball FighterZ game that came out. It's that sort of fluid and feels like you're playing that, or like maybe the South Park Stick of Truth game, where it was the first time that it felt like a cartoon really popped into an actual video game. That being said, if you're not familiar with how crazy and ridiculous Kill la Kill is, you're going to you'll be in for a surprise. It is one of the weirdest out there, craziest animes that's come out in the last several years or so, and it's worth watching for sure if you haven't seen it yet. So again, I'm not going to go into story because that would spoil too much for you. If you're a fan of the series, you're going to like it. If you are a fighting game fan, you're going to want to test it out because it's not necessarily what you're used to expecting when it comes to these types of games. That being said, I found the controls handled very well. I didn't feel like it was... A lot of these 3D arena brawlers can be kind of, I guess, like floopy is the best way I can describe it, where you're a little floaty or there's not enough weight to what you do. This feels like very pinpoint precise and very accurate, which makes sense coming from the pedigree of the development studio that it has. P-Cube is the one releasing this. I guess that's the company I received the review code from. They're getting the localization of it. And you have the option when the game starts. Like, it starts and it's in like Japanese voices and everything, but you can switch it to the dub voices from the show, which is pretty cool because not a lot of these ones allow that, a lot of these types of games. So you do have the option to switch between English and Japanese voice acting, a lot of different difficulty levels, lots of things you can customize, which is a welcome addition because a lot of games like this style seem to not have as many options as you'd expect from a full-fledged fighting game, but this definitely does. So there are physical editions you can get that have like soundtracks and extra stuff you can pre-order if you go to pcube.co.uk. You can also pre-order a digital copy. It's going to be one of those ones, I think, that runs under a lot of people's radar, but the fighting community would probably really get a kick out of it.
And it is time to close out Twig, the Flagship of Stupidity. Thank you for joining us across this voyage where we've talked about the next 007, we've talked about John Carpenter's Joker, and we talked about people stapling bread to trees and helicopter holy water. It's been a weird week here on the show, as always. Coming up on the show this week, Alex has a Turd or Treasure coming out, I think, on Wednesday.
Yes, it's going to be a bunch of movies, probably. Bunch of stuff. Basically, you got a big shipment in from Mill Creek to check out, as well as the Andromeda Strain, as we mentioned earlier, and a few other things.
For myself, I will finally be watching the Godfather trilogy this week, as I'll be reviewing that for Paramount Home Entertainment. Warner Brothers sent me a copy of Shazam. I'll be checking that out. I think that's all I've got on my review thing right now. Yeah. I do have some Dungeons & Dragons books I need to read. So maybe I'll sit down this weekend and start powering through some of those so you can know whether the Essentials box set is worth picking up, either Acquisitions Inc. or Ghosts of Salt Marsh or some of the books I've gotten recently. So I should start clearing those out of my backlog.
Yeah. Do you have any games? Let me see I've got a couple games on the go. I have Data Live Rio Reincarnation, which should be coming, I think, on the Turd or Treasure, or it's all going to depend on when I finish it. I've also got Fire Emblem, the brand new one, Three Houses from Nintendo. That'll come, I believe the review will come just shortly after the game launches. And then I also have a cool game that I just got for review called Songbird Symphony. And I'll be looking for that soon, too.
I actually don't have any games right now, so I actually might actually play some games for a while. Might
play some Persona 4.
Yeah, Persona 4, or I don't know. Like I said, there's still that retro sale going on PlayStation, so I'm still debating whether I want to pull the trigger on some classic titles. Let me see. Also, as if you've been following my social media, at Birdman Dodd, I just finished Stranger Things, the entire series. I know I'm going to be talking about that on Nerds of the Third Power in about 2 weeks' yeah. time on the 27th, so look forward to that.
I remember, like, everybody keeps posting to you, like, we already told you to watch it, you didn't.
Well, that's the thing. For me, I have to come to my own conclusion, or someone has to put a gun to my head.
Because I remember saying, I'm like, dude, this is, you're going to watch it. You're like, I don't really think it interests me. I remember hearing that many times from you, and then I was just like, all it's going to take is for him to watch one episode. You watched one, you're like, oh my god, this is all I'm doing for the next 3 days.
I think it took me 3 episodes of the first season before I was really hooked. Second season was fantastic. The third season is a giant love letter to me.
Yeah. The only other shows that really give that sort of feeling or that flavor is probably Glow on Netflix. Future Man has a similar feel on, because like with all the references and stuff on Hulu. And that's pretty much it. I'm assuming, did you see the preview I sent of the new American Horror Story season, 1984?
No, but I know it's supposed to be slasher based.
Yeah, and dude, the casting in it, like they've got a lot of the same players they get for a lot of things like Emma Roberts and that. They're even filming it to look like it's filmed on 16mm.
See, that's going to be impressive. That'll be probably my entry point into American Horror Story.
Yeah, and like here's the thing. There is a thread that connects. Like they're all in the same universe, like the same continuity. But every season is a different thing. One's on a cult, one's on a freak show, one's on an asylum, one's on witches, one's on the apocalypse, one's on a haunted hotel or aliens. But like they're and usually it's the same players. They get like a rotating cast of characters for each season, but they're an anthology, so each season can be watched individually. You don't need to know anything about any other season. But if you watch every season, you can see the threads and the timeline go through. So it's pretty cool that way. So it's the kind of thing where, yeah, you can just jump in for this season and be super, super thrilled. But then if you're a fan of the rest of the series, you'll be like, oh, this is what's happening secretly in the background.
Yeah, like it's going to be something hopefully I'll jump into later on when they finally get the show finished. And I got to say, it's going to be... I'm really enjoying this retro 80s renaissance that's happening right now. When the right people get a hold of it, like the Duffer Brothers from Stranger Things, it's really done right.
Yeah, it had been done.
Adam F. Goldberg from the Goldbergs did it right.
It had been done a little before here and there, but I would say it's probably the Goldbergs and Stranger Things that really kicked it off into high gear.
Yeah, like these are people you can tell love the source material. And really made it come alive. The only thing that would make Stranger Things perfect in its entire run is if I get a Stan Bush song, which I'm pretty sure will happen at some point. Kind of funny.
If we had an episode with a cameo or a guest director of Carpenter or Cronenberg.
Or like Toby Hooper. I think he's still alive, right?
Yeah, or Tom Savini.
Yeah. So... good times. Anyway, guys, so until next week here on Twig, keep it locked here to thisweekingeek.net. Lots of content coming up. And of course, our good friends over at Nerds of the Third Power with Dr. Gonzo, the Cat, Skyblaze, and myself, which I don't know whether I'm back this week. I know I'm back next week for Stranger Things. So anyway, until next time, we have been
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live free or die hard. And as always, be cool, be kind, be careful. We'll catch you guys next time right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Well, that's our show.
All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember...
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to Nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi. So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected. Like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.